Welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 2nd of December, 2025. This week's news items from the local papers were selected and recorded by Rosemary Shergold and Kristen Dennison, and this week's edition was compiled by me, David Field. The copying and the distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful. Today's sunrise is at 10 to 8, and sunset is at just before 5. Before the news, there is a notice.
The following news item has been received from Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agency. Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agency. Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency is dedicated to helping older adults, disabled and vulnerable residents within Oxford City to live safely and independently in their own home. The agency service is available to people who are vulnerable and need help repairing, maintaining, or adapting their home. The agency provides services as follows: small repair service, repair and assistance, disabled facilities grants, keeping warm at home. Our aim is to prevent residents who are vulnerable, at risk of falls, and have health issues from being admitted or readmitted to hospital. We specialise in practical, home-based solutions to help people live independently and safely in their homes, promoting well-being and confidence in their lives. Many of our works will require a professional to make a referral to carry out an adaptation, such as installation of grab rails, handrails, and stair rails to support safe movement throughout the home, adaptations to bathrooms, stairs, and kitchens, such as walk-in showers, non-slip flooring, lever taps, and stair lifts, as well as small adaptations to support those with dementia. Improved lighting solutions to enhance visibility in key areas like staircases, hallways and entrances. Minor repairs and maintenance to eliminate trip hazards, such as uneven flooring or loose carpets. Safety and security repairs, installing key safes to homes, installing sensor lights at entrances. Security works for victims of domestic abuse or recent burglary. Installing security cameras, window locks, door locks, safety glass. Please note that any adaptations or major repairs in Oxford City Council properties must be directed to the relevant department within Oxford City Council rather than the Home Improvement Agency. However, all tenures, including Oxford City Council tenants, can call us directly to request our small repair handy person services. Our handy persons are DBS checked, they carry council ID badges, and drive a branded Oxford City Council van to give you peace of mind. Our handy person will carry out works to your home at a subsidised rate of £20 per hour, which is for labour only. Materials can be provided by yourself or may be purchased by our handy person if you are unable to do so. But time spent to purchase materials will be added to the total of hours spent on the job. To qualify, you must be age 55 or over, regardless of health condition, and if below 55, you must have a disability or severe health problem that prevents you from carrying out the repair yourself. Some works to reduce falls may be done for free, so call us for more information. You can pay the handy person directly and safely using our handheld chip and pin device when they visit, and the handy person will issue you with a receipt. The handy person service is one of the ways we help our clients live safely and independently. So please call our advisor for free advice and more information on what is available. To contact us, please send an email to hia@oxford.gov.uk or call us on 01865 252788. We look forward to supporting you in improving your home in the best way possible. All OxTalk listeners can apply for this service. Perhaps a family member, friend, or carer can help you make inquiries about the services available.
Liberal Democrat leader Sir Ed Davey has called for urgent action from the Environment Agency to clean up a massive illegal waste dump near Kidlington. The dump, full of fly-tipped waste material, is on private land off Manor Park, a road close to Kidlington, and is about 150 meters long and 12 feet high in places. Sir Ed was joined by Caleb Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, and the environmental campaigners at the site of the illegal dump on Monday, November 24th. The cost of removing the waste is estimated to be more than the entire annual budget of Charwell District Council, which is about £25 million. Sir Ed said the government needed to step in now to ensure the Environment Agency could fund the removal of the waste before it caused environmental damage to the River Charwell. He said, "The Prime Minister, in response to my question last week, accepted it was the Environment Agency's role to clean up the site, so that means the national government has to pay for this, and the Environment Agency needs to crack on. My worry is this. They are all talking about fining the people who did this to make them pay, a policy known as the polluter pays." Sir Ed added that if the polluter's pay policy was applied in this case, the delay would lead to more pollution. He added, "You will see the chemicals and toxins leaching into the River Charwell. I don't think we can wait. Action has to be taken now. The farmers are worried that their lands could be polluted for generations. We don't know what's in that huge waste tip behind us. Yes, the government needs to get the money back from the criminals who did this, the organized criminals, but in the meantime, we need action now, and if that means paying up front, that has to happen." MP for Bicester and Woodstock, Caleb Miller, who joined Ed Davey at the waste dump, said, "Local people are stunned to see the size of this environmental disaster. They want action to be taken before the pollution slides into the Charwell. The government needs to step in before the river is polluted for generations." Laura Gordon, county councillor for Kidlington North and Otmore, said the waste dump was an environmental catastrophe in the making if it was not cleaned up soon. "The focus now has to be cleaning it up before waste goes into the Charwell," she added. "With any criminal investigation, I would love to see those responsible held to account. The Environment Agency is the lead agency and needs to get this, the cleanup, done." Laura Reinecke of campaign group Friends of the Thames said she and fellow campaigners wanted to see a cleanup plan in place and policies in place so that similar incidents could not happen in the future.
Coldest night of the season so far was recorded in most of the UK, as a chilly Oxfordshire village recorded one of the lowest temperatures. Hundreds of schools were forced to close, roads disrupted, and homes left without power because of snow in Scotland, Wales and the north of England. But the coldest temperatures were recorded here in Oxfordshire. RAF Benson recorded the coldest reading as minus 6.6 centigrade, comparable to the minus 6.4 centigrade recorded in Sennybridge in Powys. Last week, parts of Oxfordshire and neighbouring counties saw the first snow of the season, with a white dusting in Banbury Henley and just over the Buckinghamshire border in Princess Risborough.
A man has been arrested in connection with the discovery of a mound of fly-tipped rubbish which was dumped on land beside the A34. The man has been arrested as part of the investigation into illegal tipping of waste at the site next to the River Charwell near Kidlington, the Environment Agency said. The arrest was jointly made by officers from the Environment Agency Enforcement Major Investigation Team, Thames Valley Police, and the Southeast Regional Organized Crime Unit. The dumping of the 150-metre-long mountain of waste has raised fears of pollution of the river and provoked widespread outrage. The Environment Agency, which was first alerted to the illegal waste dump in July, said a 39-year-old man from the Guildford area in Surrey has now been arrested. This follows an operation between officers from its major investigation team and the Southeast Regional Organized Crime Unit. Anna Burns, the Environment Agency's area director for the Thames, said, "The appalling illegal waste dump in Kidlington has rightly provoked outrage over the potential consequences for the community and environment. We have been working around the clock with the Southeast Regional Organized Crime Unit to bring the perpetrators to justice and make them pay for this offense. Our investigative efforts have secured an arrest today, which will be the first step in delivering justice for residents and punishing those responsible." The Environment Agency previously declared a critical incident over the fly tip. Following the first report of waste being tipped in the area, the agency responded immediately with officers called to the site on July 2nd. Officers identified the landowner and issued a cease and desist letter to ensure further tipping was prevented. After officers became aware of continued criminal activity on the site in October, a court order was sought and granted to close the site. Since this was granted on October 23rd, no further tipping has taken place. For both safety reasons and because the site is now a live crime scene, members of the public are prevented from entering the site. Phil Davies, head of the Joint Unit for Waste Crime, said, "The Environment Agency is working closely with other law enforcement agencies to identify and hold those responsible for the horrendous illegal dumping of waste that has taken place in Kidlington. A number of active lines of investigation are being pursued by specialist officers. We would ask that the public and media do not speculate about the identity of any other individuals who may be connected with the offending at this location or interfere with the waste on site as we continue to treat it as an active crime scene." The agency said it was conducting a major investigation, coordinating with Oxfordshire County Council, Thames Valley Police, and National Highways.
Gardener Albert Hilland, raked in his third victory in Oxford's allotment contest, beating the drought. The 54-year-old Cabbage King spent more than 2 hours every day at his prize-winning vegetable patch, hoeing and watering the soil to stop his crop frying in the sun. He said, "I spent the rest of the time praying for rain, but we never got it. I was surprised the greens grew so well with it being so dry." Mr. Hilland of William Kimber Crescent in Headington was on holiday in Ireland when the judge inspected his and other plots. The day after he returned to Oxford, he heard that his Barton allotment had taken first prize again. Roy Smith, in the adjoining plot, took second prize.
Thames Water has officially lifted the hosepipe ban after 4 months. The temporary restriction on water use was introduced in July for customers in the OX, GL, SN, RG4, RG8, and RG9 postcode areas to help protect rivers and to ensure that there was enough water to go around after prolonged dry weather. The ban was extended on several occasions, but the water utility company says it is pleased to announce the hosepipe ban has been lifted with immediate effect as of November 27th after heavy rainfall. Thames Water said its storage position has recovered well following the above-average rainfall since October. Farmore Reservoir is nearly full, and aquifers in the Cotswolds are at normal levels for the time of year, meaning the risk of drought has greatly reduced. Neville Muncaster, Strategic Water Resources Director at Thames Water, said, "We'd like to say a big thank you to our customers for their support in helping to protect water supplies over the past few months."
A host of enchanting events to bring festive cheer will be held in Oxford's Broad Street and across the city this Christmas season. At the heart of the celebrations, the Christmas event in Broad Street runs daily until December 31st, other than Christmas Day. Building on the success of last year, the street has been transformed into a vibrant Christmas destination. Its offering this year includes live music, featuring traditional carols and performances by choirs and musicians, entertainment from community and local groups, and festive street food. The Alpine Lodge Bar is back, a cosy two-story bar where visitors can enjoy mulled wine, spiced cider, and other festive favourites. Family-friendly attractions include a carousel and Ferris wheel, stores with unique gifts, artisanal crafts and seasonal treats. In addition to Christmas in Broad Street, two of the city's favourite markets will be offering special festive experiences. At Gloucester Green Market, Christmas shopping will have an addition to the normal opening hours, as the market will run from December 22nd and 23rd till 4pm and until 2pm on Christmas Eve. Oxford City Council spokesman said, "Oxford's celebrations extend beyond the city centre this year, with an exciting mix of event and entertainment. For more details and event information, visit the Christmas in Oxford webpage or follow the council on social media." He added, "If you are visiting Christmas events in Oxford, the council encourages travel by bus, bike, walking, park and ride or train wherever possible. If using the park and ride, it's just £2.50 for parking, and then a family of four can enjoy a free bus ride straight into the city centre." Councillor Alex Hollingsworth, Cabinet Member for Planning and Culture at Oxford City Council, says, "It's Christmas in Oxford, and this year is shaping up to be another fantastic year. With the return of the event on Broad Street and festive activities across the city, there really is something for everyone. I encourage everyone to come along, soak up the festive atmosphere and support our brilliant local businesses this Christmas." In December 2024, Oxford City Centre saw 2.68 million visitors, an increase of 4.76% compared to December 2023. This footfall figure outperformed national trends and highlights a successful festive season for the city.
A community centre has reopened following a £5.9 million refurbishment project. The East Oxford Community Centre has been transformed into a modern, accessible space following a major redevelopment delivered by the Oxford Direct Services. The project involved refurbishing the historic building on the corner of Cowley Road and Princes Street, as well as adding new facilities and a low-carbon extension. Councillor Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing and Communities at Oxford City Council, said, "Oxford City Council is proud to be investing in East Oxford and the return of this much-loved community center. This investment is more than bricks and mortar. It's about investing in people, opportunities, and in the future of this vibrant part of our city. We wanted to give East Oxford what it truly deserves, a modern, accessible, and sustainable space for everyone both now and into the future. The refurbished center now includes a new kitchen, upgraded toilets, and four flexible rooms for community use. A changing places toilet and shower facilities have also been installed to improve accessibility. The new three-story extension features a balcony, solar panels, and heat pumps." Kieran Cox, Artistic Director of Fusion Arts, said, "In 1977, Fusion Arts, at that time called Bloomin' Arts, opened its doors at East Oxford Community Center. For generations, Fusion Arts has been at the heart of the community here in East Oxford, and we are delighted to be moving back home and sharing East Oxford Community Center with many wonderful community partners. We very much look forward to sharing our 50th anniversary in a couple years with everyone, too. It is wonderful to see how Oxford City Council have invested in the future of the community center and the city to create a new, modern, and accessible space for everyone to enjoy. We are super excited to see the center become a thriving and inclusive hub for diverse communities to come together to celebrate each other and enjoy life through creativity, music, dance, and the arts once again, hopefully for many generations to come." African Dance Oxford also welcomed the reopening. They said, "We are delighted for the reopening of the beloved Oxford Community Center and look forward to returning our weekly African dance workout sessions and cultural community events to the heart of Oxford community." Demolition work began in May 2023, with construction starting in March 2024.
Oxfordshire's Transport Chief said he has no comment to make on congestion charge protesters who gate-crashed an event at the Covent Market. The event was an opportunity for the four Lib Dem MPs to speak to small businesses and call for them to be supported in the upcoming national budget. Leila Moran, MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, and Charlie Maynard, MP for Witney, was there, as well as the Cabinet Member for Transport Management, Andrew Gant. Dozens of protesters gatecrashed the event just before it began, holding signs in opposition to the congestion charge. Many of them also confronted Mr. Gant. Speaking after the event, Mr. Gant said, "I have no comment on people who choose to turn up at an event about one thing and use certain tactics to turn it into something else. On the congestion charge scheme itself, I have been clear to say that policymaking is about evidence and fact. We will wait for data and we will wait and see what the data tells us. There's nothing to say about the effects yet. Obviously, we're watching them extremely closely. It's already clear that the free park and ride fares have been extremely popular. The people challenging us on that need to own the fact that opposing these things, business owners at the protests said they had faced serious losses in trade compared to this time last year since the congestion charge began, and said they had seen a fall in local customers."
The illustrator of the popular Winnie and Wilbur series, Corky Paul, paid a visit to pupils who won a competition to illustrate his latest book. Corky was looking for illustrators to help produce artwork for the end pages of the newest book in the series, Looking for Wilbur. After holding a competition and receiving more than 150 entries, he chose 26 pupils from Windale Primary School in Oxford. To celebrate the winners, he visited the school for an assembly where he shared the new book, read some excerpts, and presented the winning children with their very own signed copy, plus prizes from the Story Museum in Oxford. He said, "I was impressed with the artwork the Windale children did for a mural I designed and painted, so they were a natural choice to do the end papers in the latest picture book in the Winnie and Wilbur series, Looking for Wilbur. Of course, they rose to the occasion and produced creative and original illustrations."
Milk, meat juices, and cooking oils are among the most commonly poured substances down the kitchen sinks in Oxfordshire. Research carried out by Thames Water has stated that among the 300 Oxfordshire residents surveyed, 61% poured milk down the drain. This festive season, Thames Water is encouraging its customers to bin the grease from Christmas meals and avoid flushing Christmas dinner napkins down the toilet. The utility said, by avoiding pouring unwanted substances down the drain, pipes can flow freely and will prevent costly blockages. A total of 33% of Oxfordshire residents surveyed poured meat juices down the kitchen sink, and 27% poured oils such as sunflower, olive, rapeseed, vegetable and canola. Meanwhile, in the toilet, a quarter of those surveyed believe that disposable wipes were safe to flush down the toilet. Every year, Thames Water clears up 75,000 blockages, which on average costs up to £40 million annually to unblock and remedy.
Around £2,200 worth of meat was stolen from a community farm in Oxford during an overnight break-in. The incident occurred at Oxford City Farm on Cornwallis Road on Saturday night, November 22nd. Three of the urban farm's storage areas, including sheds and storage containers, were forcibly entered, and approximately 2,200 pounds worth of pork, 120 kilograms, was stolen. The meat was from two pigs carefully reared over the summer by the farm's dedicated volunteers and staff. Thames Valley Police have been notified and are currently investigating the incident, in which no staff or volunteers were harmed. Nicole Tutera, Oxford City Farm's lead, said, "Our team and volunteers are deeply upset and angered by this event. The loss is not only financial, as the stolen pork represents months of committed care, learning, and community effort. The meat was intended to be shared in a way that reflects the values of the farm and support its work. To have that taken from us is heartbreaking." David Kelly, one of the Oxford City Farm volunteers, said, "This whole thing is deeply saddening. The volunteers who spent their own time caring for these animals have had it all go to waste."
Sir Philip Pullman has described his home city of Oxford as a frustrating and irritating place, and criticised the absolutely ridiculous closure of Botley Road. The busy road through West Oxford has been closed at the rail bridge since 2023 for a £231 million Network Rail revamp of the railway station, and is not due to reopen until August 2026. The world-famous author of his Dark Materials trilogy also criticised the congestion charge introduced by the County Council last month as being difficult to cope with, suggesting it will have a harmful effect on trade. Sir Philip used the city as the setting of his best-selling books about heroine Lyra Silverton, who first appeared in the novel Northern Lights in 1995. He gave a talk at the University of Oxford Mathematical Institute as part of the Jericho Suburbs 200th anniversary celebrations. Speaking to BBC Radio Oxford, Sir Philip called the ongoing closure of Botley Road a bugbear to people on the west of Oxford. The author, who lives in a village near the city, said, "It's very difficult and it's had a terrible effect on Botley itself and the shops. Those of us who live to the west of the city are more or less cut off from our own city by a piece of planning so egregiously bad that I've never seen the like. And now on top of that, we've got the difficulty of coping with congestion charges and roads we're not allowed to drive down. It's very frustrating and irritating. How anyone can be expected to make a living in Oxford as a trader, as a shopkeeper or anything like that, I do not know."
A protest took place against the decision to introduce an entry fee for the Museum of Oxford, with protesters raising fears that it could kill off the museum. Oxford City Council's cabinet voted to charge visitors £4 for standard admission to the museum, along with a £2 fee for concessions at a meeting last month. The charge would come into effect in January 2026. Members of the new campaign group Save Our Museum gathered outside Oxford's Town Hall on Monday, November 24th, ahead of the full council meeting. Jess Worth, who joined the protest, said, "I think it's a really worrying decision. This is a city full of amazing free university museums, and I don't see how this museum can compete with those. This is a people's history museum. It tells the story of the ordinary working-class people of Oxford, working-class history, LGBTQ history, the story of the Windrush generation. I'm really worried that if you introduce an entrance fee, people aren't going to come to it. They're going to go to the free museums instead. Then we're going to lose this really valuable community resource. I'm not convinced that this is going to save the museum. I'm worried that it is actually going to kill off the museum." The museum displays several Oxford artifacts, including Alice Liddell's Red Cross Medal, who inspired the Alice in Wonderland novels, St. Frideswyde's grave slab, and the Cutslow walls with metal spikes, which separated the council estate from middle-class homes. The city council decided to introduce the charge because the number of visitors had decreased, resulting in a £70,000 shortfall in the 24-25 financial year, and that it was no longer sustainable for it to keep subsidizing the museum. Protesters held signs that read, "No paywall on our history, save our museum, and no charge, tax the tourists." Certain groups will still be able to go to the museum for free, including children under five, those who receive state benefits, Oxfordshire school bookings, and city council employees. Councillor Chris Smoten asked about whether the city council would consider giving Oxford or Oxfordshire residents free or discounted entry in a written question. Councillor Alex Hollingsworth, cabinet member for culture, responded that no data about where visitors came from was formally collected, and that ticketed entry would allow them to collect this data. He added that under the new system, city and county residents would be able to access the museum for free for at least 12 days per year.
There have been more than 140 incidents of an animal being abandoned so far in Oxfordshire this year, ahead of a potentially grim winter for pets. Up to the end of October, 143 incidents of an animal being abandoned or dumped in Oxfordshire had been raised with the RSPCA's emergency line. And with charity rescuers braced for a further surge in reports over the winter months, the RSPCA has launched an urgent appeal, the Big Give Back to Animals, in the hope of raising vital funds for its frontline officers. The charity Fears for Animals across Oxfordshire over the winter season, with plummeting temperatures and dark nights, placing animals at even greater risk from abandonment. Across England and Wales, 24,270 abandonment incidents have been reported this year, a rise of almost 23% compared with the same period last year, which was 19,727. This means in the first 10 months of this year, an abandonment incident was reported to the RSPCA's emergency line every 9 minutes it was open. Last winter, November to January, 5,902 incidents of animal abandonment were raised with the charity, and there are fears the upward trend of cases is set to continue in the coming months. There were 31 abandonment incidents in this time frame in Oxfordshire alone. Reports of animal abandonment will this year reach their highest point in at least 6 years, and issues like the ongoing cost of living crisis mean animals need the RSPCA's support to survive, heal and thrive now more than ever. RSPCA Superintendent Simon Osborne said, "It's been an incredibly challenging year for many pets, and we've seen a dramatic and heartbreaking rise in abandonments this year. And with winter upon us, with plummeting temperatures and dark nights, we fear things could get even harder in the months to come. Sadly, animal abandonment has become so problematic and so tragically widespread that we've seen more incidents every month this year when compared to 2024, and reports have been rising year after year. There's an epidemic of animal abandonment and neglect, meaning our officers are needed now more than ever to respond to those animals in most urgent need of help. Overall in 2024, 23,564 abandonment incidents were reported to the RSPCA, higher than in 2023, 2022, 2021 and 2020. And that depressing trend will continue in 2025, warns the charity, with calls already higher than the whole of 2024 and spiking amid the challenging backdrop of the cost of living crisis, economic uncertainty and people's increasingly busy lives.
A £200 million state-of-the-art teaching and research building, which is one of the largest projects in Oxford University's history, has officially opened in the city. Oxford University's Life and Mind building was declared open by Sir Paul Nurse, a Nobel laureate and the president-elect of the Royal Society. The opening event was hosted by Lord Hague of Richmond, Oxford University's chancellor, and Professor Irene Tracy, the university's vice-chancellor. It was attended by people involved in the construction of the building over the last 6 years, including representatives from Legal & General, Oxford University Development, NBBJ Architects, and construction partner Waits. Lord Hague said, "The official opening of the Life and Mind building marks a milestone moment for the university. It symbolizes the ambition, creativity, and partnership that drives our universities and sustains our global leadership in research and education. These outstanding new teaching and research facilities will enrich the student experience and enable the next generation of discoveries. Seeing this remarkable building come to life, filled with energy and collaboration, is deeply inspiring, and I look forward to the bold interdisciplinary projects that will emerge from within its walls." The Life and Mind building was funded by a collaboration between Legal & General and Oxford University Development. It is the new home of the Departments of Biology and Experimental Psychology and the INEOS Oxford Institute for Antimicrobial Research. The building features cutting-edge research and learning facilities, including sleep labs, virtual reality rooms, lecture theaters, experimental classrooms, rooftop glasshouses, controlled environment labs, and a dedicated space for the university's botanical collections of around 1 million specimens. Sir Paul Nurse, who was head of Oxford's Department of Microbiology 35 years ago, said, "It is always a pleasure to return to the university, and to mark the official opening of this remarkable new building is particularly special. Science is an endless frontier, and today the biological and brain sciences are at the forefront of that exploration. The discoveries that will emerge from the Life and Mind building will help answer questions that matter to all of us. What it means to be human? How can we respond to climate change? How can we ensure food security? And how can we tackle the growing challenge of mental ill health? Professor Tracy added, the Life and Mind Building stands as a powerful example of what collaboration can achieve. It unites two of our most dynamic disciplines under one roof, providing the space and facilities our researchers and students need to explore some of the most fundamental questions about life and the human mind.
The former Prime Minister and Oxfordshire MP, David Cameron, has revealed he has prostate cancer in a dreaded health announcement. The member of the House of Lords, who was the representative for Witney for 15 years and Prime Minister between 2010 and 2016, was urged to get tested by his wife Samantha after the pair heard the founder of Soho House, Nick Jones, speaking about his experience with the cancer a year ago, The Times reported. The politician had a prostate-specific antigen, PSA test, and an MRI scan, and then a biopsy which confirmed the diagnosis. You always dread hearing those words, he told The Times. And then literally, as they're coming out of the doctor's mouth, you're thinking, oh no, he's going to say it. He's going to say it. Oh God, he said it. Considering the push for a targeted screening programme for men, he said, this is something we've really got to think about, talk about, and if necessary, act upon. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer in men, with around 55,000 new cases every year. And Mr. Cameron has now said he wants to add his name to those calling for the screening programme for high-risk people. He said, let's be honest, men are not very good at talking about their health. We tend to put things off. We're embarrassed to talk about something like the prostate because it's so intricately connected with sexual health and everything else. I sort of thought, well, this has happened to you and you should lend your voice to it. He received focal therapy for treatment, in which electrical pulses target and destroy cells. The treatment was successful. There is currently no screening program for prostate cancer in the UK because of concerns about the inaccuracy of PSA test. However, he said, the circumstances are changing, the arguments are changing, and so it's a really good moment to have another look at this. His announcement comes as the UK National Screening Committee prepares to announce its decision on whether current evidence supports the introduction of screening for the disease. Chiara Di Biase, Director of Health Services Equity and Improvement at Prostate Cancer UK, said, we thank him, David Cameron, for sharing his story and in doing so raising vital awareness of this disease, which is completely curable if found early. But men's lives should not be left to chance. We lose 12,000 dads, brothers, sons and friends to this disease every year. Prostate cancer is the last major cancer without a screening programme, and we need change now.
Fears have been raised that key workers will be punished by traffic measures, which the County Council plans to introduce after the congestion charge. The £5 traffic levy, which started last month, means car drivers face a fee for driving through six roads at certain times if they do not have a valid permit. The roads include Hythe Bridge Street, Thames Street, St. Cross Road, and St. Clement's from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day, and Marston Ferry Road and Hollow Way from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Saturday. The charge was introduced as a temporary measure because of the delay to a traffic filter trial, which will not start until Botley Road reopens. Once it does, the congestion charge will be replaced by a traffic filter trial, which will mean drivers face a fine of up to £70 for going through the same roads affected by the current fee. A workplace parking levy, yet to be consulted on or approved, means employers will face an annual charge for any parking spaces they provide. A motion calling for Oxford City Council to oppose the county plans was voted down this week. Independent Oxford Alliance councillor David Henwood, who proposed the motion, said, residents, businesses, and key workers across Oxford are telling us loudly and clearly that the current transport policies are failing them. From day one, this council has approved schemes that punish people rather than support them. These policies penalize parents on the school run, tradespeople carrying tools, carers visiting the elderly, teachers transporting books, and shift workers who cannot rely on buses to get to hospitals and care homes. Let's be absolutely clear. The £5 congestion charge is just the beginning. It will become a £70 bus filter fine next year. The same scheme, just under a different name. This is not transport planning. This is a tax on movement. The workplace parking levy is another example of punishing behavior rather than supporting people. Later in the meeting, he added that the group would expand park and rides and introduce free parking on park and ride locations if they were in charge. Fellow independent Oxford Alliance councillor Ian Yeatman said, "Constituents are currently fuming over the imposition of a congestion charge, and yet they still face the prospect of further restrictions. I don't believe they want their city council to support a key worker tax, which would make the lives of key workers hard when many of our hospital staff already work long and late shifts. I don't believe they want us to force key workers out of employment in Oxford by making it harder for schools to recruit good teachers and for hospitals to retain their nurses. The workplace parking levy will go to public consultation next summer, and a decision will be made by the Cabinet in the autumn, with charges set to start in 2028 if it is approved." Other councillors spoke in support of the schemes. Liberal Democratic councillor Catherine Miles said, "What I really question here today is those that are calling to oppose a policy that has not got to public consultation yet. I want to congratulate employers in the city, including many who are in the public sector, that are already taking proactive steps and are already encouraging employees commuting from beyond the city boundaries to adopt active travel means. I, as a parent of three children, applaud all the efforts that address congestion so that school buses can move quicker, so parents don't have to do the school run, and children can take public transport or the school bus." Liberal Democratic leader Chris Smouton said, "Under independent Oxford Alliance policies, it is pretty clear that the car is king and everybody else has to suck up the consequences. They are opposing the congestion charge today because it discourages driving in the city center. But the same principle would say, let's open the high street to all cars. Let's open the corn market again. Yet we don't hear those things being said. It's because the change is the difficult bit, and the benefits accrue. And now 25 years later, it would be unthinkable to throw those benefits away. What would people say 25 years from now? I suggest the scenario might be very similar." The Labour group, who lead the council, previously supported the traffic filters trial, but they have opposed the congestion charge. In July, they proposed a motion to formally oppose the congestion charge, which was passed. But in Monday's meeting, the Labour group decided to abstain from the vote on traffic filters and the workplace parking levy. City Council leader Susan Brown said the motion was not the way to address the problem and that engagement with residents and businesses was needed. She added, "Our Labour group and party have rightly taken a stand against the congestion charge that the county has imposed on local residents. I very much hope that in future we have a united Greater Oxford and Thames Valley Strategic Mayoral Authority that would mean no more transport decisions imposed on the city without our consent." She added that the county council had a chaotic approach to transport policy. Independent councillor Amar Latif said, "Oxford is a city that is very expensive, so there's a degree of commuting which cannot completely be avoided. I know personally a teacher who is currently using up her permits to get into the city. They will run out at the end of this term. For the rest of the academic year, she will be forced to spend £5 a day. I suspect that when it comes to next year, there is no choice to pay £5. It will be a teacher that we will lose from the city." While eight councillors, all of whom were independents, voted in favor of the motion, 20 councillors abstained, including all the Labour councillors and one independent, and 15 councillors, Liberal Democrats, Greens, and one independent, voted against.
A sponsorship deal is helping a youth rugby team to take to the field with new kit and equipment. Oxford Direct Services, ODS, has announced a 3-year sponsorship agreement with the Oxford Under-12s rugby team, which will provide funding for long sleeve shirts and essential rugby equipment for the next 3 seasons. Councillor Nigel Chapman, Cabinet Member for Citizen Focus Services and Council Companies, said, "We're delighted to support the Oxford Under-12s team. Grassroots sport plays such an important role in building confidence, teamwork and community spirit. And we're proud to help these young players give the resources they need to thrive. I wish the team success in the season ahead. The initiative is part of ODS's ongoing Doing Good objective, which focuses on supporting the communities where the company operates. Simon Howick, Managing Director of ODS, said, "At ODS, our Doing Good mission is at the heart of everything we do. We're proud to support the Oxford Under-12s rugby team through this three-year sponsorship, providing vital equipment and resources to help nurture young talent. We particularly like the club's values and ethos, mentoring respect, commitment and inclusivity. Equally important for ODS as well. Investing in local youth sport is a meaningful way for us to give back to the communities where we operate, encouraging teamwork, resilience and opportunity for the next generation. In addition, an advertising board featuring ODS will be displayed around the senior team's pitch."
Oxford City Women celebrated a record-breaking crowd at the weekend despite a loss to rivals Swindon Town. The results went against Oxford City Women on Sunday as the Robins ran out 3-0 winners in the Women's FA Cup. Despite the loss, the day will live long in the memory after a record crowd came along to the M Group Stadium to support the team. Over 750 fans smashed the record crowd for an Oxford City Women's game, and the club plans to build on that support in the future. Speaking to Oxford City, Aaliyah Anthony, who has driven the women's development path at the club, said, "First of all, it was a huge effort from everyone at the club. It doesn't matter if they were on the turnstiles, working in the bar, selling 50-50 tickets, or out there on the pitch looking after the mascots, or doing any of the countless jobs around the ground. I thought it was an outstanding effort and really highlighted what we are about as a football club. We have had so many messages thanking us for making people feel welcome, and that includes some really wonderful messages from our mascots." In terms of the game itself, Swindon are obviously a very good side, so we know it was going to be tough. That's their 19th win in a row, but we were always in the game and stuck to the game plan well. I certainly think the girls should be proud of what they did. In that squad, we had players like Emily Harris, Sophie Lester, Yaz Edwards, Kira Maskell, Amelia Davis, Poppy Gorman, Reese Ayers, who have all come through the Velocity program here, young players who did the club proud. That's what we set out to do here, a clear pathway to help young footballers. To see them hugging their parents after the game or high-fiving the young girls who'd come to watch was a great moment. We have had 500, then 600, and now over 700 of the last three cup games, and now we have to carry that on. We know that there won't be that sort of crowd next Sunday when we are at home to Badshot Lee, but we have to keep building and keep the momentum going in everything we are doing here. We want to thank the fans who have been unbelievable, and I think this match report summed it up nicely. The season of adventures closes, but the journey for women's football at Oxford City continues. Oxford Airport has completed the first phase of a new £480 million tech park project to make the airport a leading aviation hub. The airport near Kidlington said the first part of its new technology park, AROX, was complete. Initial buildings of the £48 million development, which will comprise five buildings and a cafe amenity hub, have been finished, providing office space and labs. When complete, the significant investment will add 200,000 square feet of office and lab space in units up to 50,000 square feet at the site. Will Curtis, managing director of the site formerly known as London Oxford Airport, said, "AROX is a direct investment in the future of the Thames Valley. We're building the infrastructure required to attract and nurture the next generation of high-value, high-skilled businesses in technology and aviation. London Oxford Airport's not only a leading aviation hub, but a center of innovation and a creator of employment and training opportunities for the region." Project leaders said the new buildings are targeting high sustainability standards and include sustainable features like electric vehicle charging spaces and photovoltaic panels on the roof of all units.
The city's dog warden has struck gold with an award in recognition of his dedication to looking after stray canines. Oxford City Council service provider, Oxford Direct Services, ODS, and its dog warden, A.D. Higgs, has been awarded the RSPCA's prestigious Paw Prince Gold Award for the second year running. The Paul Prince Awards are the only scheme of their kind in England and Wales, celebrating the work of public sector teams who go above and beyond to promote animal welfare and responsible pet ownership. Oxford City Council said Mr. Higgs did so much behind the scenes to help stray dogs to find safety, care and often their way back home. 2 years ago, the service earned a Bronze Award, but the RSPCA has recognised ODS's continued commitment and high standards with the Gold. Dog warden Mr. Higgs said, "We're absolutely thrilled to receive Gold again. Every day I see how much these dogs mean to people, and it's a privilege to be there to help when they're lost or in need. We work really hard to make sure every animal gets the care and respect it deserves, so this award means a lot." To achieve Gold, the ODS Dog Warden Service had to demonstrate excellence in everything, from the care of sick or injured animals and behavioural training for staff, to enforcing microchipping laws, providing out-of-hours cover and promoting responsible ownership. This Gold Award is a fantastic recognition of the care, compassion and dedication shown by our dog warden and ODS, said Nigel Chapman, Cabinet Member for Council Companies at Oxford City Council. They do an incredible job, day in, day out, not just keeping animals safe, but supporting local people too. It's something our whole community can really be proud of. Lee Gingell, RSPCA's Public Affairs Manager, added, "We are thrilled to recognise outstanding organisations for their pioneering work. It's vital to recognise the fantastic efforts being made to improve the lives of animals wherever possible. Despite challenging circumstances, councils, housing providers, emergency planners and other public bodies are finding innovative ways to promote, protect and improve animal welfare in their communities. Their commitment not only delivers real benefits for animals and people, but also serves as an inspiration to others. Last year, Mr. Higgs adopted one of the stray dogs he found after nobody came forward to claim the animal. In January, a dog was saved from the Cutslow Park Duck Island thanks to fast work from Oxford's dog wardens. Mr. Higgs said, "While I provided support and equipment, the real credit goes to everyone involved, including colleagues from car parks, parks and tree services, who all came together to ensure a successful rescue."
A popular Oxford cafe opened for the last time yesterday following a lengthy legal battle with its church landlords. Will Puget opened the Vaults and Garden Cafe in Radcliffe Square in 2003 in a building owned by the University Church of St. Mary the Virgin in High Street. 20th anniversary celebrations were interrupted by an eviction notice from the parochial church council of the church, and Mr. Puget, his staff, and cafe operators Fresh Connection decided last month to leave to avoid further legal costs. Wednesday, November 26th was the last day of trading for Vaults and Gardens on the historic site of the old congregation house, which is thought to date back to 1320. However, the Vaults and Garden brand will continue from Saturday, November 29th at 2 King Edward Street off High Street, where Mr. Puget's business Chickpea, a vegetarian cafe, has been trading since 2023. Mr. Puget said, "It's a sad day. There's a lot of emotion involved. But Vaults and Garden will continue at Chickpea and will be called Vaults and Garden, so the name, the recipes, and the atmosphere will live on. It's an emotional process, but we have had a huge amount of support from customers over the years. There are 70 covers, places for diners, at the Vaults, and only 45 at 2 King Edward Street, but that will have to suffice. There are 26 covers on the ground floor and 22 in the basement, so that's our new Vaults. The spirit and the staff and the recipes will continue." Mr. Puget said the vibrant mix of customers at the Vaults and Garden had made it a special place. "It's a unique mix, and there's a really good buzz. It's not just young treddies or old fuddy-duddies," he added. "Parties were held at the weekend at the cafe to mark its closure. There was a party for suppliers on Friday and a party on Saturday for staff and supporters, attended by about 80 people. The new Vaults and Gardens is expected to open on Saturday, November 29th at 8 a.m. It will trade 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6 days a week and from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Thousands of people signed an online petition to save the vaults, but in the end, a crowdfunding campaign could not raise the remaining legal costs. Only £17,117 was raised for legal costs via crowdfunding, and the cafe owners decided to end the fight by reaching a settlement with the landlords. In 2023, the parochial church council of the university church said it hoped that a new cafe could be operated as a social enterprise not run by Mr. Puget.
A team from Oxfordshire is to create the Grenfell Tower Fire Memorial. London and Oxfordshire-based Free House has said that it is a responsibility that we do not take lightly, describing itself as a firm which works with empathy. It was chosen from a shortlist of five and will work with bereaved and survivor families, as well as the local community, to produce a final design, which is expected to be announced in mid-2027. The Grenfell Tower Memorial Commission has been consulting on plans for a permanent memorial in the area of the tower, with previously reported recommendations including a sacred space designed to be a peaceful place for remembering and reflecting. The Commission community representative said they feel confident that the right team has been selected to walk this road with us. In addition, they said that they are now significantly closer to creating a bold, fitting and lasting memorial to our 72 loved ones and to our Grenfell community, whose lives were forever changed by the devastating tragedy in June 2017. The directors of Free House, Jonathan Hagos and Tom Bell, said they were honoured to have been chosen and be working closely with the bereaved survivors and the rest of the Grenfell community to design a fitting memorial to the many lives so tragically lost. They added, "As we take our first steps in this journey, we want to acknowledge the 8 years of advocacy and purposeful action led by the Grenfell community that has brought us here."
New virtual access guides have been launched to help people with physical and sensory needs navigate hospitals. The Oxford University Hospitals, OUH, NHS Foundation Trust, in collaboration with Access Able, have introduced guides for more than 60 services, wards, and departments across Horton General in Banbury and Nuffield Orthopaedic Center in Oxford. The initiative is supported by the Oxford Hospitals charity. The guides aim to make hospital visits easier for patients, visitors, and staff requiring additional support, providing detailed information on routes and facilities within the hospitals. They can be accessed for free on the OUH website and the accessible website optimized for mobile use. This allows visitors to plan their visit in advance or navigate the hospital while on site. The guides, developed by Access Able, were created with input from disabled people to ensure their accuracy and relevance. Trained surveyors gathered extensive information on aspects such as entrances, lifts, toilets, parking, lighting, assistive listening systems, and signage. Volunteers then conducted a period of full testing. Simon Crowther, interim chief executive officer at OUH, said, "We want everyone who comes to our hospitals to feel confident and supported. These guides allow patients and visitors to plan ahead, reduce anxiety, and focus on the reason for their visit. We would like to thank Oxford Hospitals Charity for fully funding this project and to Access Able for helping us make this possible. This new service supports our commitment to improving the experience for everyone who uses our services. It is hoped that further guides will be developed for other hospital sites." Representatives from OUH, Oxford Hospitals Charity, and Access Able attended a launch event where a plaque was unveiled. Douglas Graham, Chief Executive Officer of Oxford Hospitals Charity, said, "We are here to support the Trust in providing the best possible care for patients and making our hospitals as welcoming as possible. Reducing stress involved in a visit, especially for those worried about accessibility, is an important part of care, so we are delighted to have supported this important initiative, which is now up and running at Horton General and Nuffield Orthopedic Center." Anna Nelson, Chief Executive at Access Able, said, "Accessible healthcare starts with accessible information, and we're proud to work with Oxford United Hospitals to make that a reality. We are hugely grateful to Oxford Hospitals Charity for funding this work." Oxford United have fallen into the championship relegation zone after midweek results did not go the way of Gary Rowett's men. The U's drew 1-1 with Norwich City in a game that was largely seen as a must-win for both teams. Jovan Makama opened the scoring for the Canaries after half an hour, leaving an uphill struggle for United to claw something from the game in the second half. With the match looking dead and buried, Rowett's men managed to conjure up the moment they needed when Philip Krastev bagged a 95th-minute equalizer at Carra Road. The Bulgarian's first goal since arriving in the summer saw his side clinch a point, which head coach Rowett declared he was happy with after the full-time whistle. With nothing to separate the two sides, the U's remained 5 points ahead of 23rd-placed Norwich in the table. Wednesday, November 26, saw the sucker punch land United's way despite them having already played. Early relegation rivals Sheffield United ran away 3-0 winners at home to Portsmouth, lifting them above Oxford and out of the bottom three. The result did prevent Pompey from creating a further gap above the U's as they sit 2 points ahead. However, the Blades now occupy 21st, a single point above Rowett's team, who are now 22nd with 15. The Yellows face fifth-placed Ipswich Town on Friday night, November 29th.
Two buses crashed outside Oxford Railway Station. The vehicles collided as one attempted to leave the road around the station forecourt at around 6:20 p.m. on Thursday. Bodywork was visibly damaged and hanging off on one of the buses, while an eyewitness said windows had been broken. Oxford Mail reporter Esme Kenny, who was attempting to travel home, said, "I was walking on the pavement towards the station to get my bus home. I saw the bus turn the corner out of the corner of my eye, but I didn't register what had happened till I heard a loud crash. I realised that as it was turning, it had caught the side of another bus that was waiting in one of the bays." She added that those nearby stood in shock after the crash and said there was visible damage to the buses. "Myself and a few others," said Miss Kenny, "just stood there in shock for a few moments." She added, "When I walked around, I could see a small section of the bus near the wheel had fallen off and some of the windows were smashed. No one appeared to be injured, and although both buses have stopped, there didn't seem to be any significant delays resulting from the incident."
A luxury golf and country club hotel has been criticized by hygiene inspectors. Bicester Hotel Golf and Spa on Green Lane in Chesterton has rooms starting from £99. A statement on the business's website says, "Whether you are looking for a place to relax in the Oxfordshire countryside or want to play a round of golf with friends, you'll find what you are looking for at Bicester Hotel Golf and Spa." The country club was visited by members of Charwell District Council's environmental health team last month. Inspectors were far from impressed with what they found, handing Bicester Hotel Golf and Spa a lowly food hygiene rating of 1 and stating major improvement was needed. One key problem area was the country club's management of food safety, which was also deemed to require major improvement. This refers to having a system or checks in place to ensure that the food sold or served is safe to eat. It also concerns whether there is evidence that staff know about food safety and if the food safety officer has confidence that standards will be maintained in the future. The cleanliness and condition of both the facilities and building were also stated as requiring improvement. This includes having an appropriate layout, ventilation, hand-washing facilities, and pest control to enable good food hygiene. Lastly, the hygienic handling of food, including preparation, cooking, reheating, cooling, and storage, also required a necessary improvement. Bicester Hotel Golf and Spa has been approached for comment on the inspection.
The public will not be given a chance to have their say on Oxfordshire County Council's upcoming budget plans for the first time in recent years. The authority says this is because it is almost impossible to predict how much money they will get from the government due to changes in how grant funding is allocated to councils. But a campaign group has said they were shocked at the lack of transparency shown by the council. Councils normally put their draft budget proposals out to public consultation between now and January, before agreeing on a final budget in February. The government is proposing a major change in the funding formula to local councils, with the aim of distributing more money to more deprived parts of the country. Councils were meant to get confirmation of what these changes would be in October, but this has been postponed till the end of November. A spokesperson for the County Council said, This represents the biggest change in distribution of funding to councils for more than 10 years. The delay has had a big impact on the council's ability to anticipate the levels of funding it will receive and thus maintain its normal budget timetable. By this stage in the year, we would normally have all the information required other than the final settlement. In addition to the new formula, the government is using updated data sets, which were only published last month. For these reasons, it is almost impossible to predict what funding we will get. As such, the budget timetable for 26-27 would not allow a meaningful consultation to take place in January and for feedback to be used to inform the process. Other councils would be in the same position. They added that they would use feedback from summer engagement activities, resident surveys and focus groups to inform how the budget will look. South Oxfordshire District Council and Vale of Whitehorse District Council will also not be holding a formal consultation on their budget. But West Oxfordshire District Council and Charwell District Council have already launched public consultations on their budget. Oxford City Council also confirmed there would be a public consultation in December. In a cabinet meeting, County Council leader Liz Leffman said, "The fact that we're probably not going to get the settlement until very late is not just hard on our officers, but actually it means we don't have any time to consult with residents. We basically have to do what we do with whatever money we've been given. We had hoped that this new government would have brought some of this forward, but unfortunately they haven't." Oxfordshire Road Action Alliance said it was important for the council to hold a public consultation. A spokesperson said ORAA is shocked at the lack of transparency and questions if this is best practice.
A bid for Oxfordshire to be united with Berkshire and possibly Swindon under a new mayor is due to be submitted later this month. Councils in Berkshire are set to agree to join forces under a Thames Valley Mayoral Strategic Authority, MSA, through an expression of interest letter to the government. This would involve the councils in Oxfordshire and Berkshire uniting behind a new elected mayor in what is called a combined authority. These authorities are made up of the leaders of all the councils and an elected mayor. The leaders would be in charge of strategic planning, housing, and transport planning across the area. Examples of combined authorities include the West of England, made up of Bristol, Bath, and North East Somerset, and South Gloucestershire councils, the West Midlands, and Greater Manchester. If agreed by the government, devolution has the potential to unlock up to £18.7 billion for the Thames Valley economy by 2040, generating £7 billion in additional tax revenue and creating new opportunities for residents and businesses. It will also support coordinated investment of housing, roads, and public transport, expand skills and training, and ensure research and innovation translate into jobs and growth across every part of the region. The move has already received support from the council leaders in Berkshire. Councillor Liz Terry, leader of Reading Borough Council, said, "The new authority promises to unlock enormous benefits for residents, allowing the Thames Valley to reach its full potential." Jeff Brooks, leader of the West Berkshire Council, has pointed out that the creation of new authorities has been encouraged by the government. On the benefits, he said, "With new powers and funding, we'll be able to invest in improving our roads, public transport, and affordable homes, making life better for families and businesses." Stephen Conway, leader of Wokingham Borough Council, has also welcomed the reorganization of local government, as it will allow councils to tackle strategic issues that require joined-up thinking. On delivering improvements to residents in the area, Mary Temperton, leader of Bracknell Forest Council, said, "This would be an important step forward in our local devolution journey, which aims to help boost the local economy and improve services that are really important to our residents, like transport and housing." Discussions on a Thames Valley MSA have included local authorities in Oxfordshire, Berkshire, and Swindon, but no final decisions have been made yet. After each council decides to submit the expression of interest letter to the government, detailed proposals will then be developed in the coming months for consideration by local councils and partners.
Volunteers have been working hard this year to discover more about the lives of 24 servicemen who died in the Second World War. Now, details of what they have discovered are on display at St Matthew's Church in South Oxford, where they are commemorated on a plaque. The latest of the brave men to feature in Memory Lane include Henry Sawyer, 22 years old, of Canning Crescent, who served with the Rifle Brigade and went to Italy with his battalion following the Allied invasion of the Italian mainland. He was killed in June 1944 during fighting between Allied and German troops near Lake Bolsena in the province of Viterbo. He is buried nearby. Derek Drew, 21, of Edith Road, a clerk at Exeter College, Oxford, before the war, was a pilot officer with the RAF Volunteer Reserve and qualified as a pilot in May 1940 after training at Kidlington Aerodrome. 3 months later, he and two crewmates set off in their Bristol Blenheim bomber to search for the crew of another Blenheim, which had failed to return to base after a raid on Cherbourg. Their plane was shot down by a German Messerschmitt over Le Havre, and all three were killed. They were buried in adjacent plots in Le Havre. Frederick Williams, 21, of Buckingham Street, left Southfield School in East Oxford to work at the Shelmex depot in Hollybush Row. He joined the RAF Volunteer Reserve and trained as a pilot. After being posted to Egypt, his plane failed to return to base one night in October 1942, and he and all of its crew were presumed lost. His family had to wait almost 6 months before his death was confirmed. He's thought to have died over the Bay of Biscay. Leslie Shepherd, aged 21, of Marlborough Road, was a leading seaman with the Royal Navy aboard HMS Penelope, which was sunk by a German U-boat off the coast of Italy near Naples in February 1944, with the loss of two-thirds of the crew. He was a keen footballer and swimmer and a member of the Boys' Brigade. After leaving school, he worked as a wages clerk at the pressed steel car body factory at Cowley. Others on the memorial include Frederick Molyneux, 20, of Bertie Place, a private with the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry, who died near Cassel in northern France in 1940, and Edward Boswell, aged 29, of Gordon Street, a gunner with the Royal Artillery's Light Anti-Aircraft Regiment, who died in 1943 in the Solomon Islands. Dennis Cumley, aged 21, of Marlborough Road, died in May 1940 in Vatoux, Belgium, while serving as a private with the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry. While Leslie Boyles, 21, also of Marlborough Road, a driver with the Royal Army Service Corps, died in a motorcycle incident in Swindon in August 1940. It's not clear why Frederick Thompson's name appears on the church memorial. The exhibition will be open at the church in Marlborough Road until December the 7th, Monday to Saturday, 10 till noon, and Sundays from 2 till 4.
There is hope for an Oxfordshire estate after two floods in a week. Residential Road, Buttercross Lane of Whitney, experienced flooding issues last week due to the heavy rains from Storm Claudia. Having been submerged on Tuesday, November 11th, it also experienced serious problems on Friday, November 14th. The MP for Whitney, Charlie Maynard, visited the lane several times while it was experiencing issues, while Oxfordshire County Council dispatched a pumping unit to pump some of the water. West Oxfordshire District Council sent sandbags for the residents. Householders Kate and Richard Wakefield, who bought their house as a new build 12 years ago, said that the situation is a ticking time bomb. Mr. Wakefield said, "My wife and I are constantly stressed, knowing it's a ticking time bomb before our house gets flooded, frustrated by the noise all day and night as drivers speed through the flood, and disappointed by our now-dissolved developers who decided a permeable brick drainage system would work." Following the incidents, Councillor Thomas Ashby has been meeting with officers to discuss long-term plans for fixing Buttercross Lane and says there is hope of a solution. The Conservative said, "I am very encouraged that Oxfordshire County Council are taking the flooding issues at Buttercross Lane seriously." This comes as he expressed some frustrations with the local authority dragging their feet last week. A spokesperson for the County Council said last week, "The site is permeable paving construction with a section that is not allowing infiltration. This is also in the low spot for the whole of the access road, which suffered from lack of proper maintenance prior to adoption by Oxfordshire County Council, hence the drainage issues now. Following the meeting, Mr. Ashby explained that they are planning to investigate the construction of enhanced surface water storage facilities and are in the early stages of designing a new drainage pipe to discharge into the existing Queen Emma's Dyke, Caldwell Brook. He added, "Residents have had to endure this problem for too long, and I am hopeful that we will see significant further progress on these plans in the coming months." Mr. Ashby has confirmed that any solution will come at the taxpayers' expense, stressing that it won't be a quick fix, especially considering the paperwork required with the Environment Agency. He suggested shorter-term solutions if flooding happens again before the end of the year. As an interim measure, he said, residents will now be able to contact the council directly to request pumping services when the flooding recurs.
A briefcase used by J.R.R. Tolkien to carry around the first drafts of The Hobbit is being sold at auction. The unique case is among a treasure trove of personal items belonging to the fantasy author that is expected to fetch combined hundreds of thousands of pounds. The case was owned and used by Tolkien during his time at Pembroke College in Oxford, and alone is expected to sell for more than £10,000. Mr. Tolkien was a fellow and the Rawlinson and Bosworth Professor of Anglo-Saxon at Pembroke between 1925 and 1945. During which time he penned his first masterpiece, The Hobbit. The special auction dedicated to the writer includes personal items, rare books and autographs. Among the lots are his personal door knocker, a smoking pipe given to him by a close friend and fellow author C.S. Lewis, and an incredibly rare first edition of The Hobbit. Andrew Stowe of Auctioneum, which is hosting the sale, said, "To think that his first draft of The Hobbit could have been carried in this very case is remarkable. The case comes inscribed by Tolkien to the top with his initials and his name and college on the inside. At first glance, it's just a simple briefcase. But it probably was used daily by Tolkien, and every scuff, ink stain and mark tells a story. It's probably the most important briefcase in modern literature. The knocker, in the form of a Viking ship, once adorned Tolkien's home in Headington, where he lived with his family for more than a decade, during which time he published The Lord of the Rings. It carries an estimate of £7,000 to £9,000 and is described as so very Tolkien by the auctioneer. Another highlight in the sale is the smoking pipe gifted to him by C.S. Lewis, engraved with a dedication from Mr. Lewis addressed to his friend Tollers. The two began their friendship at Oxford in 1926 and formed an informal literary group, the Inklings. Mr. Stowe said, "The connection between C.S. Lewis and Tolkien is so famous and so well known. To have an item that represents this is not only very exciting, but incredibly important. The pipe carries an estimate of £8,000 to £12,000. A rare, true first edition of Tolkien's 1937 masterpiece, The Hobbit, is also for sale at the auction, carrying an estimate of £16,000 to £18,000, one of the first 1,500 books printed, which sold out within weeks." The auction house expert added, "This edition features the original black and white illustrations that Tolkien himself created. It's one of the holy grails of modern literature collecting. A handwritten poem, Goblin Feet, penned by Mr. Tolkien himself, is also being sold and is expected to fetch between £10,000 and £15,000. It was written in 1915 for his soon-to-be wife, Edith, and this version has some alterations from the published version, such as the word tinkly in place of the published twinkly. Mr. Stowe said, it's unimaginably rare and completely unique. J.R.R. Tolkien, an auction of precious items, takes place at Auctioneum Limited in Bath on December the 8th. The full catalogue can be found at their website.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280. and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to OxTalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to OxTalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.